Ken, why don't you introduce our two guests this year?
I would love to. So our two guests today are Tom McKinney and Tahir Abdullahi.
I'm Tom McKinney. We farm in, my wife is here with us as well. We farm in Tipton and Clinton counties. We are about 5,000 production acres. Soybeans are mostly all seed soybeans for Pioneer Hybrid. We are back in the seed corn business, but most of our corn goes to the ethanol plants, occasionally some food grade markets in Indianapolis.
Hello, I'm Tahir Abdullahi. I'm an agricultural economist. I work for the International Institute for Tropical Agriculture in Nigeria. And I work mainly I do what I learn here, actually. I work on impact assessment of technologies, but I spend a lot of time doing also some extension type work and helping some seed companies to work on their marketing strategies to promote their seeds.
No, isn't it really interesting the different paths that people take to get to our department? I think it's astounding the diversity of people that pass through here every day. That's what makes my job exciting. And what's really neat is I think I have sort of intersections with both of these people. Tahiro, I taught Tahiro in class not so many years ago. And Tom and I, it turns out, were actually students on this campus at the same time. I don't think our paths might have crossed in a class somewhere.
And we're both still very young. Ask us, we'll tell you.
That's right. That's right. Well, so we have two people that are distinguished alumni working in agriculture. I'm curious what they think some of the big challenges facing the food and agriculture sector are, and maybe how a place like Purdue could help address those.
The challenge that most of us in production ag, really anywhere in the world, is how we're going to feed this world in 2040, 2050. We had a quick discussion at breakfast that it's going to be through biotechnology. I think that a lot of us are focused on how we are going to do that in a few short decades. China already buys practically every soybean we can produce, that plus Brazil. They're wanting protein, and their diets are improving every year, and they want more and more. And so who's going to meet that demand? And it's fun to be a part of that right here in a couple counties in Indiana.
Yeah, I agree more. I think the world, there's economic growth. And one thing that's going to happen is in recent years going to come is Africa is growing fast. And that's huge demand that's going to come, especially for protein-based products. And those need to be produced. And the debate whether we use GMO or how we're going to do it, technologies have to be used in order for us to continue producing. Like we're talking about this sports cut thing, but the way communication technology have changed the world, that's the same thing or vision I see for biotech in order to help really reduce cost of production and keep producing more for the world.
So let me come back to the second part of my question. What can a place like Purdue do to help foster success relative to that challenge?
So I see Purdue, okay, the training, obviously that's what Purdue is doing, but I think beyond just training, giving people a degree, there's one thing that's out there, the debate, he alluded a little bit to it, is a debate whether biotech is evil or not. Clearly, there is a lot of people who are against those kind of technologies who are talking, and they don't see the scientists talking enough. Those who really know what it is and explain and communicating it very well so that the general public will understand it better.
You're listening to this, Jessica? This is why we hired you.
I am listening to this. You are giving me great fodder when I come to my faculty.
Absolutely.
With projects.
Yeah. I had an opportunity to dialogue with a nun from Kalamazoo, Michigan, who was anti-biotech, frankenfoods and Roundups killing everything. And so one of the sisters was on the bank board with me and said, would you like to dialogue with her in front of our order? And I said, absolutely. And so I just said, look, don't you think that it's good that virtually thousands of Africans can now see because they've inserted the beta carotene gene into the white rice to make it yellow or golden rice? And had no idea that was taking place. And not one person, but thousands are able to see better because of the carotene in their diet. I shared with her, did you know that Roundup is simply a contact herbicide and does not get flushed into our water stream and therefore go down our rivers and end up in the Gulf of Mexico. Well, no, they didn't know that. And so it is not, and so where Purdue comes in is teaching all of us as graduate and undergraduate students, as well as faculty, telling those brief, simple, quick stories to those who might have questions or those who object. We need to keep the land-grant universities strong. If we don't, it's going to be bad news.
Do you think that's a question of training our students to giving them the communication skills to be able to go out and address these, or do you think it's a function of having the faculty be more proactive in reaching out to the public?
I think there is a little bit of both, and certainly training the students or even faculties actually to communicate better and say get the message out. But I think Agricon is already doing some of that in terms of getting the faculties involved in. There's a paper that came in Agricultural Economics this year where Agricon faculty and a former student published a paper where they did a survey in Ghana, Nigeria, I think, and Niger, asking farmers what they think of BT cowpea. So those kind of results, this is an empirical work showing this is real people answering questions, and people, it clearly showed that people are not against biotech. So they just need to be more informed and know about it. Mm-hmm. I think that's what Agricon can do.
Yeah, it's a great story of agriculture, isn't it? We face these challenges all the way back to Thomas Malthus talking about how we wouldn't be able to feed the world, and agriculture does an amazing job somehow of always responding to that challenge, and the poor farmers ended up being the ones whose profit margins always end up shrinking back to historical levels, but it really is amazing. We just saw it recently in the last 7 or 8 years with the increase in corn-based ethanol and the rise in demand in protein, Tom, that you mentioned in developing countries, the pressure on food supplies and now actually running surplus of grain to the point where, as I said, profit margins for farmers are back to very, very slim margins. And so thanks to people like you, really, people out on the farm who are putting these technologies to work, and people like Tahiro that are busy devoting their lives to spreading that information to farmers and helping farmers adopt those technologies more efficiently around the world.
Something that I have thought about a lot when it comes to these communicating these pieces of information, I thought about it a lot because I didn't come from agriculture, so before entering this department, I also had a lot of preconceived notions. And it was astonishing coming in here and realizing how much is just not getting out. And one of the problems I see is that it's such an emotional subject. People get really emotional about these issues. And I wonder, in your experience, do you have any advice or thoughts on how to help people to respond to that emotion without in turn becoming emotional?
That's a great question. My first and main response is get some science behind it. Don't get on the internet. Don't listen to what your friend from the East or West Coast thinks. Base it on science, because there's a lot of science to back that up. Your question 2 times ago, I think that not only staff, but bullet points. It's very difficult if somebody learns some science so well that they can't explain it. Just say, like we were talking here, some of the simple things. Well, isn't that a good thing? Or how do you propose to feed the world in 2040? They can't come up with an answer. And if genetically modified organisms are so bad, and we've been using them for 40 years, where's the science behind that they're bad? For those who don't care for that kind of thing, there is an option. Fine, pay a little bit of a premium for an organic or whatever. You still have that option, and we embrace all of them. I may actually grow a few organic acres in the future because of the profit margin, but not very many. So it's just a matter of getting the word out and being able to stand up to those who oppose it.
And the debate will always be emotional, because there are some people who feed on those emotions. That's their business, to sell that emotion of big NGOs and sort of that. So the emotions will always be there. But I like the point you made at last is, really, to me, is we have to offer a buffet to the world. Some people like organic, let them have it. Some people take the other one. Gives choices to people. It's about choices. And then let them make the choice for themselves. Well, we don't have to confine ourselves to one thing.
So it's like we trained some people very well in economics.
I know. They're really good at that here. They've been. I have an economic perspective now that I didn't have one before entering this department.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say thanks to these two individuals for coming back to the campus and spending some time with us as faculty. We really treasure their successes, and it makes us feel good about what we do, and the chance for them to come back and share with our students is just phenomenal.
And it's really helpful to see what this department is working towards, training, developing, et cetera, seeing how it's being applied out in the world in such different ways in different countries.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Anyway, so you've been listening to the Agricultural Economics Podcast. You can go ahead and follow us on Twitter, or like us on Facebook, or you can check us out on our webpage
at www.agecon.purdue.edu.
Thank you.